You are now tuned into Virtually I'm Possible Presents Lazy Learning Land Podcast, where we teach teachers how to be lazier yet more effective to increase student performance while decreasing teacher burnout and stress. I'm S-Dot, your hostess that always gives you the mostest while I am doing the least. Also known as the queen of working and not working. I have over 15 years experience working at the hood schools and still I thrive. Today's episode is sponsored by the Virtually I'm Possible's A Teacher's Guide blog, which can be found on virtuallyimpossible.net. No apostrophe. This is where educators can enter the lazical world of lazy learning land. There, you can find the 5 teacher laws on how to be a lazier yet more effective teacher, amazing classroom management tips, and also general blog posts that cover other pressing teacher topics. And now for today's episode. All right, all right, all right, everyone. Welcome to another episode. I'm so happy to have you guys back. This episode really excites me because it was birthed from an actual interaction I had with a student within the past week. So, you know, this one is very authentic and very raw and, you know, still kind of very, very real for me. But today we are going to cover hold expectations, not grudges. How to navigate these student-teacher conflicts. I promise you guys, you want to stay put from the beginning to the end. I'm going to give you applications on how to hold expectations. What does that look like? What does that sound like? I'm going to give you applicable ways to not hold grudges with your students and be able to treat every day like a new day. So let's just dive right into it. We are going to cover the scenes of inevitable teacher-student showdowns. I mean, y'all, no matter what grade level you teach, you are certainly going to end up in a teacher-student showdown, also known as the power struggle. Depending on the grade level that you teach, you know, your power struggle, of course, is going to look a little bit different. Middle school and high school seem to mirror each other pretty similarly. And elementary school, a standoff with an elementary school kid is definitely going to look a lot different than a standoff with a high school kid. So elementary is kind of in a league in its own, but regardless, y'all, irregardless of the age level of your students, every educator can benefit from the idea of holding expectations and not grudges. All of these tips can be applied no matter the grade level of student you are working with. So I promise you, you're going to walk away with some hidden gems. Now, what does holding expectations, not grudges, look like in reality, in an actual situation? So I told you guys, this is really birthed from a situation, an encounter I had with a student of mine within the past week. And we had a standoff. I had gotten in a conflict with a student. I do teach high school. And at some point during this conflict, I was trying to send the student to another teacher for like a cool down moment. But she was just absolutely refusing. And then she was walking off, yelling through the hall, how she going somewhere else. Not only was she being insubordinate and loud, causing a scene in the hallway, but this girl was calling me all types of names as she was walking off, so on and so forth. And to you guys, I am the queen of working and not working. But to my students, and I kid you not, my students have deemed me as Queen Petty. So if my students call me Queen Petty, I'm pretty sure you can kind of conjure up some scene in your mind of how this played all out as the student is, you know, doing the name calling and kind of storming off through the hallway. I'm pretty sure, you know, as the Queen of Petty, I did not just stand there and take her verbal lashings. I did find a way to stand my ground. I found a way to reaffirm my expectations of respect and my expectations of compliance to the school and classroom rules. And you know, while I was doing that professional spin on it, I sprinkled sprinkled in some non-textbook remarks, just enough for her to know that I am not the one to play with, honey boo boo. Okay. But I also stayed behind that delicate line of being sent downtown on a write-up. So I stood my ground, but I didn't go across the line that would cause me to get a write-up. Fast forward to the next day, I did end up running into this particular student, and I spoke to her in a warm, you know, warm, welcoming, inviting type tone. And I said, hello, such and such. And I said her name. And she replied, hey, miss. But she was looking down. She wouldn't make eye contact. And then in that same warm tone, I said to her, today's a new day. I don't hold grudges, and I hope to see you in class. Now, she did not respond to my last comment, but she did end up actually showing up to class. This same student had a great day and several more connected great days as well, as if this incident never happened. So where did this whole idea of hold expectations and not grudges come from? I would be the biggest liar if I told you guys that I always operated like this, with this much decorum, this much coof, this much class. I'd be a bold-faced liar. It really was not until my second year of teaching, after I almost got fired my first year teaching. And if you have not heard that story, it is a podcast episode. It's called Teacher Fired in the First 90 Days, How They Made a Classroom Comeback. After you finish this episode, I definitely, you know, I encourage you to give that a listen, just so you can kind of get an understanding of, you know, from whence I came to get to this place where I am now. But anyways, when I first started teaching, I began at the middle school level. My first year of teaching, where I was almost fired, I started off in eighth grade, and then I moved to seventh grade my second year. And I just want y'all to know, if you have ever taught, talked to, interacted with, worked with, or have children of your own that is at this middle school age level, you know they are a different breed. I mean, it is almost as if every single middle school age child is clinically bipolar, but just no one's going to take the time to staff all of them, because the goal and the rationale and the science behind it says that they will eventually grow out of it. And for the most part, they do. But baby, those years between, whew. So, you know, these hormonal, I don't know what's going on with my body. I don't know how to control my mind. And I surely can't figure out this work you're trying to teach me. Working with this demographic of kids while in the hood, on top of that, taught me this one valuable lesson. And here's what happened. So again, I'm teaching seventh grade, and there was this young lady who literally cursed me out from A to Z and then back to A during my second period class. So, you know, I had to have the deans come get her, have her escorted out, so on and so forth. I wrote the referral and I had it sitting on my desk. I was going to take it to the dean's office during my break. She returned to my classroom right before lunch, which is fifth period, and she gave me a really big hug, a smile, and said, see you tomorrow. And I stood at my door completely baffled, confused. Like, this is the same student that, like, literally, I got her referral on my desk because she cussed me out so bad. And now she done came to me, gave me a hug, a smile, and is excited to come to my class tomorrow. Now, I did end up turning the referral in, because you ain't gonna just cuss me like that. But what it really showed me is that the nuances of dealing with kids and just how important it is to hold expectations for them, but not hold grudges. Because it seemed like to this child, once some cuss words came out of her system, whatever that was bothering her, she felt better and she's ready, you know, to be in my class again the next day. So moving right along, how can you hold expectations, not grudges? Remember this one thing as the baseline. we don't know who our students are being raised by. We don't know what their home life is like. We don't know that environment. We don't know the personality of their caregivers or the responsibilities that are thrown on them once they get home. These kids can get stressed out just like adults get stressed out. So how do we bounce back after getting into a conflict with the student? I'm about to give you all the remedies. I'm about to give you all the tea. We're going to slide right into how to not hold grudges. So these are my tips to not hold grudges. I've got 4 tips on how to not hold grudges after being in a conflict with a student. And the first one is, don't take it personal. As I would say my good friend Monica, but she don't know me. But as Monica would say, don't take it personal. I'm not a singer. I know. I'm not quitting my day job to be one. But yeah, don't take it personal. Don't take anything personal is actually one of the 4 agreements. The 4 agreements is a book that is written by Miguel Ruiz, and it is intended to help readers explore freedom, happiness, and love while creating a more successful life. And if you want to learn more about the 4 agreements, please, you know, Google it, look it up, check it out. There's some articles out there about it. And there's also a paperback and audiobook that you can purchase off of Amazon if you really want to dive into it. But again, the 4 agreements by Miguel Ruiz, we're going to focus on don't take anything personally. Now, how does one not take anything personal? How is that going to help you with your students? Easy. See, that student having a bad day usually has absolutely nothing to do with you. And I find myself in the midst of conflicts sometimes saying to my kid, like, I don't know what happened before you came into my class today, but I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And you're in here taking it out on me, which is not right. But if you are having a bad day and you are just in one of those moods where you can't hit the reset button right now, then please allow me to send you to another class where you can process all these feelings that you got going on, you know, work through everything and work on getting yourself back to you. I then ask them, you know, if they are going to be able to pull it together right now, or if they do need to step out and go to the other class. And sometimes I even offer up the option of, hey, do you want to talk to me about it? Do you need like 2 or 3 minutes just to vent and get it off your chest just so you can feel heard and, you know, just free yourself from it? And usually they'll pick from one of those 3. They're either like, no, I can get it together. Or they're going to say, can you please send me somewhere else? Or, yeah, can I talk to you outside? They usually will take one of those 3. I don't tend to have students that are just so hell-bent on being angry that they don't take one of those more healthy outlets to kind of work through those things. The moral of the story on this one is their feelings are not actually about you, which is part of the 4 agreements as well. Don't make assumptions. Don't assume that the way that child is behaving is a direct result of something you said or did. So don't take things personal and don't assume. Again, I highly suggest you guys check out the 4 agreements, but I'm going to move forward to my second tip on how to not hold grudges, which is to extend grace and forgive. Regardless of whether or not you are consider yourself to be spiritual or you consider yourself to be religious, most followings have some principle around extending grace and forgiveness. I am a Christian woman, and I'm not going to throw the Bible at you, but I am going to say that God wants us to give grace and forgiveness the same way He gives us grace and forgives us. He wants us to return the favor of grace and forgiveness, but return it to others. All right? Do not throw your students to the fire just because they had a bad day. Or don't do it just because they may have had a series of bad days. You genuinely do not know what these kids are going through. And if most adults struggle to process life, like some grown people ain't even mature enough to be grown. Most grown people don't have the tools necessary to support themselves through adulthood. So how can we expect a kid to process life better than we do? And we sitting here struggling processing it. So try to take some time to talk to that student. Ask them to stay after class or pull them into the hallway during class. Just be very intentional on getting to know the why behind their behavior. And it is so important to be present and listen to them. You would be so surprised how many students will tell you that no one listens to them. No one cares about their feelings. No one asks them what they want or what they think or what they like, what they dislike. Nobody cares about them and the aspect of what makes them happy or what they would like or what they don't like. So just by you offering to be a listening ear to them, that is going to instantaneously take their defenses down several notches. All right, y'all. And the third way to not hold grudges is to apply the golden rule. The golden rule, for those of you who didn't learn this in kindergarten, is to treat others the way you want to be treated. This indeed is the golden rule. As adults, we have all found ourselves like stressed out to the brink of a nervous breakdown. And during those times, we were not the best versions of ourselves. We were snappy. We were irritable. We were stubborn. We were nitpicky. We were deflective. We were blame shifting. The list could go on of all the little toxic traits that we had during those times where we were just stressed the hell out. And some of us even had to circle back and apologize to those people around us for the words and actions that we exhibited during that time, because it really didn't have anything to do with them, but they just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And baby, you gave it to them. So the same way we want others to be understanding when it pertains to us, when we are just off and not quite ourselves, we also have to be understanding and extend that to others. That also includes our students. And no, I am not saying, please. Yes, queen of working and not working, but also Queen Petty is not saying to be a doormat. What I am saying is allow your students to be forgiven, given grace. Like, don't be a doormat. Don't allow your students to disrespect you without correction. You do need to correct them. But when it comes down to punishments and how harsh and the book that you throw at them and the fire you throw them into, just take all things into account when you're off and you're not yourself. How would you like it if somebody gave you very harsh consequences for the things you said and did when it really wasn't about them? You were just stressed to the point of where you feel like you have no outlet, no point of return. So what I am saying is, when your students humble themselves through word or through action, accept them with open arms and just allow them to hit that reset button. Ooh, now this is my fourth tip on how to not hold a grudge. And I got to be honest at the beginning, this one is surely not from a textbook. However, it is very instrumental for me when I am trying not to hold grudges with my students. No adult wants to feel like their hands are tied behind their back. No adult wants to feel like we are a doormat for our students to talk to and to treat any type of way, which is why I am preaching to hold expectations, not grudges. For me, when a student get out of pocket, they are no longer operating from a child's place. They have now stepped into adult world. Maybe they're using adult language. Maybe they're calling me names or out of my name, because I've experienced that before too. They may be trying to attack my character, my personality, so on and so forth. And when this happens, especially in the heat of the moment, I got to clap back. I got to clap back. I got to clap back. Okay? I got to dish out some sort of clap back. I can't just stand there and take it. My blood is boiling. Like, I'm not mature enough for this job. I got to give some sort of a clap back. And I must do this in order for me to assert myself and command some respect back. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that I curse a student back out because they're cursing at me. If I get called the B word, I don't call them a B word back. Like, I don't clap back like that, but I do assert myself and I do stand up for myself so that I don't have to feel like later on I gotta hold this grudge so they know I'm still mad at them. No, I do that clap back in that moment so that when this whole moment is said and done in the back of that child's mind, they know, oh, I don't need to play with her because she not the one. Like, she gonna get back with me. So I need to find a different approach for handling her because she not gonna just stand there and take it like no punk. So like I said, I don't curse the student back out. I don't crack jokes back at them. Okay, well, like, there was this one time that I did crack jokes back because the little girl started talking about my edges. And at that time, my edges was a sensitive subject. And so, don't talk about my edges. Thank you. I do try to find things to say that maintain my position of power as the adult in the room. So things that reiterate the rules we have regarding respect in my classroom, or the rules that we have that regard respect as a part of the school culture. I also reiterate the fact that respect is a two-way street, and I give respect, so I expect to get it back in return. And because I didn't disrespect them first, they need to find a way to reel it back in, because if they gonna stay in disrespect, they about to get some disrespect thrown back at them times 10. I tell them, I got more attitude in my pinky toe than you got in your whole body, baby. You don't want this. You don't want this. And I don't say you don't want this as like I'm physically threatening them. I'm just letting them know, like, you don't want me to unleash the beast and get back with you. So please find a way to reel it back in for your sake. Not your sake, not mine. And I do also try to make sure I find ways to point out that their behavior, their word choice, especially if they've been cursing. I try to find a way to pinpoint or point out that their behavior and their word choice is immature at best. And I try to inform them, like, hey, baby, you trying to go toe-to-toe with a whole grown person. And if you trying to go toe-to-toe with me, you're going to have to elevate your communication skills. You're going to have to find some better words, because you're using childish words. I said cuss words, some childish words. Like, I need you to expand your vocabulary if you're going to come for me. And, you know, so I use things like that as a way to kind of make them pause and be like, oh, dang, she kind of got me. Like, all right, let me try to find some other words to use. I may not use all three of those strategies in every situation, in every conflict, but I will serve up at least one. So, like I said, all those things just kind of help me to stand my ground, stand up for myself. And when I go back to reflect on the situation later that day, it just helps me to know that I did not allow myself to be bullied by my student. And my other students, now this is also key, my other students, because you know, when nobody doing no work, once the showdown started, they all stopped working. But I also showed my other students that I'm going to stand up for myself as well. Now they're aware that if they cross the line, they going to get checked as well. So as I stated before, sometimes I am not mature enough for this teaching job. I do have a line that I'm willing to get right up to, but I won't cross, because that's the line. My mom was a teacher for 34 plus years, and she taught me about the line of don't cuss at a kid, don't cuss a kid out, don't put your hands on a kid, and pretty much anything else, you probably can save your job. So I got a line that I won't cross, but I will get that pinky toe really close to the line. And, you know, but I won't cross it, because I remind myself, like, hey, what's on the other side of this line could be a write-up, could be termination. And the last time you checked your savings account, the way your savings account was set up is it's set up connected to your checker's account, and both of them got insufficient funds. So what we gonna do is we not gonna cross the termination line. You know, that line helps me to reel myself back in. I treat that, you know, how dogs have an invisible fence and they know that the fence is there. So they'll get really close to the area where the fence is, but they are trained not to go past that spot because they know once they hit that spot, the invisible fence is going to kick in, and shock them or whatever it does. So that's how I treat my line. Like, I'm a dog with the invisible fence. I'm not going to go cross that line, but it does help me to be able to hold expectations and not grudges. So those are my four tips on how to not hold grudges. We are going to roll right on into how to hold expectations, how to hold expectations. Okay, I got four ways on how to hold expectations for your students. The first one is to remember who may be raising them. Cycling back to this overarching thing that we do not know what our students deal with at home. We don't know who their role models are, and we don't know what's normal in their household. By no means, like, am I sitting here saying that we should take that as an excuse, but we do need to keep that in the back of our minds. And we have to recognize that we may be the only ones trying to instill certain values and manners into that child because they're not getting that type of enforcement at home. Okay, come on, come on. Now, we have all been to that one parent teacher conference, you know, the one where you look at the parent and in the back of your mind, you're thinking to yourself, like, if you were the parent and you talk like this, or if you were the parent and you think like this, well, I can't even be mad at the child. Like, they are truly a product of their environment. I can't even be mad at Shorty. Like, how can I expect this kid to come to my classroom and behave a certain way when it's the exact opposite in their household? And yes, I said it. Yeah, I took it there. And you guys should know by now, I'm the one that's going to say what everybody else is thinking. So we're going to move right along. But we all know that some of those parents is sketchy parents. But I digress. I do tell my students during conflict, look, hey, I don't know how you allowed to talk to the people in your household, but in this house, in this classroom house, in the place where my name is on the door, we don't get down like that. That type of language is not tolerated. Those types of actions or behaviors are not tolerated. Which leads me into my second point on how to hold expectations, and that is teach your students to code switch. See, in order to hold expectations and not grudges, I then have to work on teaching my students about code switching. Yes, I teach high school, but you can still take this concept and break it down to even the elementary level of understanding. And I give them a self example. I give them an example using me. And I tell them that, I was like, this is what I tell them. True story. It sounds like this. Cherie is a totally different person than Miss Carter. You see, Cherie is who I am outside of these school walls. Cherie is uncut. Cherie is uncensored. And Cherie probably ain't got no business influencing anyone's child. But Cherie cannot come into this schoolhouse, cannot come into this classroom. Cherie cannot keep this teaching job. So once I park my car in that parking lot, I have to code switch from Cherie to, hey, Miss Carter. And Miss Carter is the one who stands before you on a daily basis. Miss Carter is the one who teaches you math. And Miss Carter also teaches you life. Miss Carter uses professional and appropriate language. Miss Carter keeps a certain demeanor and a certain decorum about herself. Both Cherie and Miss Carter operate from the same body, but they use two different parts of my mind. After telling them that, I bring it full circle and I drill in the idea to my students that y'all may be able to act and talk reckless in these streets, but there's certain types of language and disrespectful gestures that you may be able to do at home. But all of that needs to be left out in the hallway. So the moment you come across my threshold, you need to code switch so you can thrive in my classroom. It is a requirement for you to come into my classroom and act like you got some sense. And for some of y'all, y'all class A actors and actresses, because you're really acting. Because outside of these walls, you was a hot dang mess. But when you inside of these walls, you gonna act like you got some sense. And I tell them, you look, you can act, you can pretend, you can make believe, do whatever you got to do, but make sure that you make it happen. And sometimes we have to extend grace to our students as they're learning this concept of code switching, because you have to keep in mind, they're probably not held to these standards. Your standards and expectations are not being reinforced when they go home. So they're really only getting it during that time period that they are with you in your class that day. So when you add up the hours, they're at home getting the opposite reinforcement more than they're in your classroom getting the regular reinforcement or the good reinforcement. So you do have to be a little bit patient. But there are times where, you know, that patience does run out in terms of like, hey, I've given you enough time and grace. So now we've got to put a little bit of fire behind you. You know, I got to follow through with some discipline actions because you're not catching on. But I promise you, as long as you hold expectations, not grudges, everything will smooth itself out over time. Which leads me to number 3, be consistent across the board. Holding the same expectations for all of your students, irregardless. You can do this by making sure that you address behaviors and not the specific person. When you address behaviors, it takes the emotion out of it. Because a lot of times as teachers, we are guilty of saying, oh, but it's such and such and they're one of my favorites. I tell my students all the time, I don't have an issue with you. My issue is with the behaviors. My issue is with the comments that are currently coming from you. If they stop, then I stop. And we can get along just fine. I make mention that there are certain kids that I never have to fuss at. And it is because they avoid saying certain things. They avoid doing certain things that will earn them negative attention from me. I say all the time, like, hey, those kids that don't hear from me, they follow these golden rules that are posted in the front of my classroom. So I have no need to call them out about anything. They stay off my nerves and I stay off theirs. So the fourth and final way that I have for you guys to hold expectations is to limit your referrals. Now, I don't know what you call them in your county, whether it's referrals, demerits, write-ups, whatever. But the stuff that gets sent down to the discipline dean's office to be processed to give them a consequence that's larger than what you can give them in your classroom. I'm talking about limiting those things. Now, I know you're like, but these sure ain't bad. What you mean limited? Hear me out, because there's a method to the madness. Yes, I work in the hood schools, but I literally write anywhere between 3 to 5 referrals the entire school year. Our school year is 180 days. I write less than 5 referrals every school year. I am guaranteed to write a referral if I get cussed out, if I'm verbally or physically threatened. Those are automatics. Almost anything else we can use as a teachable moment, especially if it's like a first to second offense type thing, and you're really trying to work with that child. The more referrals you write, now this is the rationale behind writing less referrals. The more referrals you write, the more times you send them to the dean's office to be handled, the less power your students think you have. If I write a referral, that does not mean I held a grudge. It means that you took it too far, so far that it cannot be handled in-house anymore. So I try to handle things in-house because that helps me to hold my power. Now, when I've given a kid at least 2 chances and they still not catching on, then yeah, we have that conversation like, you know, I'm about to write this referral, right? And is this the first time I've talked to you about this behavior? No. Have I had conversations with you about it? Yes. Have I given you opportunities to correct yourself? Yes. So you understand that this referral is not personal. It's just that you need a little bit more help getting it together. Yeah. I understand. And that's the conversation I have with them before I turn that referral in. So they are well aware that it's coming down the pipeline, but they are also aware that I gave them chances. My other students are also aware that I gave them chances. Therefore, I'm still maintaining a certain level of respect, and I'm still maintaining a certain level of power with my students. Another reason, because of the demographic I work with, that I try to handle stuff in-house is because I don't know how much trouble these kids get into in other teachers' classrooms or in the hallways with administration. Heck, I don't even know if some of them are still on probation, and a referral could get them violated. So I honestly don't know if my referral will be the thing that tips the scale so far not in that child's favor that they may not be able to bounce back. So when your students know that you are trying to work with them, they will actually try harder to work with you because they see that even though they're not their best self, you're still trying to work with them. And deep down inside, they appreciate that because your most troubled students are just used to everybody being on their behind and everybody throwing the book at them the first chance they get, that it is a breath of fresh air to them when somebody does take the chance to just try to work with them. They appreciate that more than you know, because you are probably a needle in a haystack for them. All right, we gonna sum this thing on up. I've given you 4 ways to not hold grudges, 4 ways to hold expectations. So when you hold expectations, not grudges, it really makes for that forgiving environment in your classroom. And it's one where everyone is able to receive grace, where a bad day doesn't have to ruin the whole school year. Like I said, I work in the hood, and many of my students' parents are working 2 to 3 jobs. They are rarely around, or they lack the patience, or they lack the energy or the time to spend to pour into their kids, and the kids end up raising themselves. So you are that suedo mom. You are that suedo dad. You are that auntie, that uncle. We are trying to instill life lessons into our students that will make for higher functioning and more successful adults. So holding expectations, not grudges, will go a long way with building respect and a positive environment for relationships with your students. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Virtually Impossible Presents Lazy Learning Land. Comment below your thoughts on how to hold expectations, not grudges. Which tip was an aha moment for you? Which don't hold grudges tip and which hold expectations tips are you going to start using ASAP? Since there is strength in lazy, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to this podcast, my blog on virtuallyimpossible.net, no apostrophe, and our social media platforms, Pinterest and Instagram. On Instagram, you can find us under virtually_I'm_possible, so you can feel at home among other lazy learners. Again, let's keep that conversation going in the comments. This is your girl S. signing off, and until next episode, remember to live long and lazy, and never, ever work too hard.